This is Kate Harness with 307net Radio, and today I'm joined by County Attorney Tucker Ruby. Hi Tucker, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Nice, and thank you very much for taking a moment with me. I wanted to ask you about drug court. We have a drug court here in Johnson County, and Wyoming has had drug court for a while. But you've received some increased funding recently.
We did,
and
yes.
So, you know, I thought it was a great opportunity for us to sit down and just talk about what drug courts are, how they operate here in Johnson County, and so on, and then what you're going to do with the increased funding. So maybe you could just explain for people who are not familiar with drug court what they are and how they operate.
Yeah, so drug court is a short name for them. The actual name is Alternative Treatment Court. And it's an incentivized program, basically, to help individuals who have had run-ins with the law, who have had violations that involve alcohol or controlled substance, and they can enter into, there's certain requirements to get into it, and we can get into that.
Yeah, I'd like to talk to you about that, but let's lay the land first.
Yeah. But there's certain requirements, and then they can get into the program. It's voluntary for them to get into the program, but once they agree to it, then they'll be ordered in, and then they have to comply with the terms of drug court. But it's set up where we have a team of folks, so it consists of my office, a judge, Judge Jarvis, who actually is instrumental in bringing the drug court here, I think back in the 90s, a long time ago, and he's been the judge for the drug court ever since then. And mental health is part of it, so VOA is part of it, mm-hmm. and then they have peer specialists that are with that. We have the drug court coordinator, which is Mark Wilson, who also runs the justice office and does some other things for us. And we all come together every 2 weeks, and we talk about the individuals, about what they're struggling with, what they need help with, if they've met all their appointments, if they've had clean UAs, all those things.
UA?
Ear analysis test.
Okay.
Sorry.
All right. So
Drug testing. And so if they've had all those things, and then we go in and we meet with them, and they get to tell the judge how they did and what's going on, what their struggles are and those sorts of things, and what's going on. And it's set up to incentivize and to really provide praise for them for the good things that they're doing and to help them with the things they're struggling on. The entire drug court program, at least in Johnson County, is based entirely on honesty. And so if we find out about something, so they come in and have a hot drug test, if they told us about it beforehand, our response is going to be very different.
Okay.
If we have to catch them doing something they shouldn't be doing, then there are consequences. They can be thrown in jail, they can have house arrest, they can have various other things. But the entire point of the drug court is it runs parallel to the criminal court, in that the idea is to try to develop sobriety for any of these individuals. And so we do that by the mental health providers. They provide them counseling. So they have IOP. Everybody who's in drug court goes through IOP, which is intensive outpatient treatment. And while they're in that IOP program, they also have testing requirements. They also have other meetings they go to. We added a couple years ago a component called Thinking for a Change. Tyler Broderick with Northern, which is VOA now, he brought a really great idea. He said, you know, we're addressing the substance abuse issues, but we're not really addressing the criminogenic thinking. We're not addressing the fact that they still think in the criminal realm. Mm-hmm. And so they have this program that they do there called Thinking for a Change, which addresses the thinking errors that folks have that lead them back into some of the bad decisions that they used to do. And so we have coupled that with the counseling, and we've had good results with that. And so that's kind of an overview of what it is.
And so what you're saying is that criminal activity often goes hand in hand with substance abuse of some sort, whether it's drug seeking to finance drugs, whether you end up selling, you know, so that you can use or whatever, or you get engaged in stealing or other things, or maybe you just, you know, get picked up for some kind of DUI or some other unrelated thing.
Any of that is criminal thinking, right? So, I mean, if you're going to go to, you know, any one of the local places where you can get alcohol, and you're going to drink to excess and then drive, well, that's a criminal thought, right? I mean, we don't think of it in that terms, but that's what it is. And so it's to try to help them process those thinking errors. It's not saying, hey, you know, having a drink of wine with your dinner is a bad thing, but having three drinks of wine and then deciding to drive home, maybe not the best idea. well, not maybe.
Yeah,
it is not the best idea.
And there will be consequences, or there could be consequences.
Right. And so it's getting those kinds of ideas, right? So, you know, healthy ideas and healthy thoughts, we try to foster those while also saying, hey, anything that would guide you to break the law, that's criminal thinking. That's a breakdown in the way you think. And so let's figure that out.
And of course, substance abuse problems, you know, are not isolated to just one small part of your life. They affect every single part of your life, your ability to hold down a job, your ability to take care of family, your ability to function as a parent or a carer or just an employee. I mean, it's in every part of your life. So it does not serve somebody well to be in a chronic state of addiction. And is drug court designed to counter addiction? Does it?
Yes, that's the goal. So a participant that we've had in the past related to us that he had, and we talked about alcohol, but it's not, we have folks that alcohol, methamphetamine, you know, all kinds of drugs, you know, marijuana, etc. We don't care what your drug of choice is. If you want to get help on it, we're here to help. But anyway, his drug of choice was alcohol, and he related to us that he had drank every day for 10 years. Now, this is a former participant, but that, and he had never really come to grips with the fact that that was happening in his life until he decided to deal with it and say, wow, okay, I do have this problem. I do need to deal with this. And, of course, he came into our view because of a criminal act. But he had sort of functioned for a very long time. But then once, now that he's sober, he's looked back. And when we were talking to him, and this a couple years ago, but when we were talking to him, once he got sober, he was able to kind of realize, oh, wow, it was affecting this part of my life and that part of my life and this part of my life. And there was no part of his life that was not negatively affected by his alcohol use. And so it was really kind of an interesting revelation for this guy to come to that realization. And he's doing great now. And I hope he continues. You know, I hope that, you know, he continues on forever and ever. But it's those kind of things that we try to help foster. And it doesn't matter what the drug of choice is. We want you to be sober and happy and healthy. And that's the goal. Now, my job, you know, and I say we because I talked about the drug court team. My part in the drug court team, I'm not qualified to do the counseling. I don't believe that I am. You know, I'm not qualified for a lot of the things. But what I can do is I provide the incentive side of it. And so from a standpoint for me, you know, if they violate, then it's my job to argue for whatever punishment is. So if they have, you know, if they have a UA that they fail or whatever it is, then it's my job to come to court and say, okay, this is the punishment that needs to happen.
Okay.
Or whatever the case might be.
So how do you qualify to, you said it's voluntary,
yes.
So is this kind of like a plea deal? You bargain your way out of maybe looking at an unpleasant sentence. I mean, any jail time, nobody wants to be incarcerated. And so you can sort of say, okay, I'll take this other way out then. This looks a better option to me. Does anybody qualify? How does it work?
So mental health providers, specifically VOA, they have the ability to do what's called an ASI and an ASAM, which is an addiction severity index that they do. So they basically do a test with you, ask you questions, and run other things. They get your history from us, and they go through basically this paperwork with each individual, and they assess them to what is their treatment need. And so under state law in the state of Wyoming, if you get a DUI, you have to get an ASI. With almost all felonies, you get an ASI. If there's any substance related at all, or if there's a suggestion that the substances are involved, you get this ASI. So you have to do this test. The result of that ASI, you can get various grades. So 1.0 level is low level treatment that you need. 2.1 is intensive outpatient. 3.5 is intensive inpatient. And so there's a grading scale. So to qualify for drug court, you have to score a 2.1 level of addiction severity.
Okay.
And if you score that high, then you...
Is there a ceiling to that? I mean, could you be
3.5 is the highest.
3.5, and you would still qualify. And if you're, is there a severity or an intensity to your criminal activity that qualify or disqualify you from being able to participate in drug court?
Yes. So there is. So part of what we do is we try to avoid someone. So if we have, we've had various folks that have been, charged with delivery of controlled substances. Generally, we try not to put someone who is delivering a controlled substance in with a bunch of folks that have an addiction. It's not unheard of, and we have done it before, but that individual has to meet certain qualifications. And so, usually, you don't put a fox in the hen house, so to speak.
But don't you think that most people who are delivering in fairly small quantities are actually using as well?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And so that's part of the consideration that we have with those folks. But they have to be a good candidate, because we don't want to have somebody in the drug court who may be delivering to the other individuals, or there may be the temptation there. And so that's part of the drug court's team. And so anytime we have somebody, I might have somebody go through court, and I'm like, you know what, this is a good candidate for drug court. I talk to their attorney. Or I talk to them if they're unrepresented. They say, okay, I want you to contact Mark, and I want you to talk to him about Mark Wilson, and I want you to talk to him about drug court and see if you're interested in it, see if you want to make application to the team. If they do, then they have to come and meet with us as a team. And so they come in, they'll sit in this chair right here, and they will, we'll ask them questions about why you want to be in drug court, what's important to you, what do you like about the program, what do you know about the program. I usually talk to them about the importance of being honest, and that they have to use the folks that are resources for them. If they're willing to do that, then we're willing to work with them. And we kind of go through that with them, and then we have them step out. And then as a group, we decide that we are going to allow them in the program or we're not going to.
So, you could take a very cynical perspective on that and say, well, whoever's sitting in your chair, actually, it's in their interest because they don't want to be incarcerated.
Right.
Because you're not incarcerated as part of drug court, are you?
Some people have been incarcerated and then they go into drug court afterwards.
Right. So what you're trying to ascertain is, are they genuinely intentional, and not just remorseful for being caught, but have genuine intentions to get out from under their addiction?
Yeah, and that's the goal, right? And we're not always correct. Sometimes people come in and you can tell that they're very hesitant, but then we'll say, okay, this person really needs the program, and they'll get admitted to the program. And then during the course of them going through the program, whatever, a switch gets flipped and they buy in and they understand the benefit of it. And you can see the difference. Okay. And, that's really neat to see somebody who is like, I don't really think I need this. Just part of the drug court program is admitting you have a problem. And that's pretty hard for all of us. I have trouble with that myself. And so for someone to say, yes, I need help and I have a problem, and then to cross over, and sometimes people are a little bit hesitant. They know that they need to do the drug court because they want to avoid further penalty, or because, their family's telling them they need to clean up or whatever it is. They have some incentive to do it, but they're like, I don't want to do this. Because the program, and I should have said this too, the program's a year long.
So I wanted to ask you, what is the program like? What is the participant required to do?
So it's broken into four stages. And so, and each stage, so you have to be sober for a certain number of days in each stage to progress to the next stage. And so if you did everything right, like if you progressed through your stages, had no hiccups, had no issues, it's still about 11 and a half months long. And so usually you're looking at a year to be in the program before you graduate from the program. And so that's kind of the process. And when you're in phase one, you're very restricted, right? So you're going to be testing a lot. You're going to have curfews. You're going to have lots of requirements on all the things you
and
do.
Is that self-monitored, or
Mark Wilson, who is the director of the program, is basically a probation officer for those individuals. So they have to go meet with him, give him their schedule, all those sorts of things, make sure they have clean tests, all those things, all the way down the line. And as you progress through the phases, when you get up to phase four, which is phase four, and then you graduate, as you're doing better in the program, you get more of your freedoms back. And so the idea is you get more and more of your freedoms, and hey, we're gonna remove this requirement. We're gonna remove this requirement. And as they move along, and as they move along the program, you also see the progression in the difference that it's making in their life and how they've bought in, and they're like, hey, I like this, and I enjoy coming, and I enjoy the feeling of being sober, and I enjoy the feeling of having other people around me that, you know, feel the same way I do and have the same issues I do. Because that's one of the things too that we run into with folks, whether it's alcohol, whether it's drugs. A lot of them are aware that other people have these issues, but they kind of think they're really alone in it, you know. And so they're sort of in this, well, I don't want to talk about it because it's shameful or whatever it is. And once they get in a room with other people that have similar issues to them, in a lot of ways it's kind of freeing and helps them feel like, okay, I can talk through this. I can deal with this. And so that's one of the benefits of the group dynamic that we do. You know, we talk about every time we have drug court, we say, okay, Tucker Ruby has, you know, 107 days of sobriety. And then everybody claps, you know, and you know, tells them good job. Every time they phase up, they have to do a paper. And so they write a paper about what they've learned and how things are going in their life. And, you know, it's really fun to see the progression of the folks through the phases and how their essays that they do change as they go. And each time they give the essay, we tell them good job. It's very complimentary. It's, you know, it's based very much on rewarding good behavior. And our hope is during the entire drug court, that's all we do is reward good behavior, because we don't have the bad behavior. But there is the punishment component. We have jail sanctions. We have, you know, house arrest. We have various other things that we put in place. One of the neat things about drug court is we can be pretty creative on what we want to do. So we can say, so if we're talking about Kate, and okay, Kate's not going to respond well to going to jail, but this would affect what she's doing, and this would be a more stiff penalty and also incentivize her to, you know, not screw up. And so we sort of, we can be very productive, and we're not sort of boxed in on, all we can do is send someone to jail. And, you know, speaking for myself, I think jail very much has a part in helping people decide to change their life around. Like, I'm a proponent of incarceration. I think there are some definite benefits of it, but it doesn't always work. And this is another alternative that we're working with and trying to get people to, you know, get their sobriety.
So that's the big question. It's been here in Johnson County for over 20 years, mm-hmm. two decades. We've seen nationally and in our own little community a significant uptick in drug use, the types of drugs that are used. Is it successful? Does it work?
I would say yes, but I think the way that, you know, success on sobriety, this is going to sound kind of cliche or whatever, but is it successful to you if you go through the program and then you maintain sobriety? Yes. And so if we're successful with one person, so one person who has drank for 10 years straight and now they're living a sober lifestyle and they're being able to enjoy their work, enjoy their family life, and do those things, then I would say, yes, that's a success.
Is that more successful? I suppose the other benchmark could be, is it as successful as incarceration? And, you know, your point about, you know, yes, incarceration has a place, but maybe there does need to be other tools in the box as well. I mean, is there a measure for kind of how successful straight incarceration is as opposed to drug court? I mean, you did mention that maybe not everybody takes a clear shot all the way through to graduating, and some people might say, well, they're just being soft. You know, they're allowed to get away with stuff in drug court. It's not right. They need to.
One of the neat things about drug court is there's a much more immediate response. So if you have a hot test, so let's say you have a hot test on Monday, you're going to be seen probably Wednesday. And so we're going to address that right away. Now, you may not go to jail, but we're going to address that right away. And so to say, is it more or less you know, beneficial incarceration? I mean, there's certain things that I would say incarceration is much better. And there's certain individuals that I would say incarceration is much better. And so that's part of how we structure our drug court. We try to admit the folks in our drug court program that we think, you know what, this is an individual that drug court is going to be beneficial for. Sometimes we have an individual who are like, no, they're not going to take it seriously. You know, they don't want to change. And if they don't want to change, then the answer is incarceration. And so, you know, as we were talking before, and I believe this, you know, everybody talks about, and you hear it on the news about rehabilitation. I don't believe we rehabilitate anyone. I believe we give them the tools to rehabilitate themselves. One of those tools is we incentivize them to rehabilitate themselves through the threat of incarceration or actual incarceration or whatever it is. But until an individual makes that choice that they are going to change their life, and that's one of the neat things. I mean, you know, I would say, mention Celebrate Recovery. Celebrate Recovery is full of folks that some of them gone through drug court, many of them we've prosecuted, and many of them have chose to stay sober, and they've made choices in their life, and they have become rehabilitated. And so we have seen it in Johnson County. So if I say, is drug court in Johnson County successful? Yes. Is it successful in conjunction with other things? Absolutely. Okay. I think the people that are engaging, so we have a lot of folks that may do drug court, and they may do Celebrate Recovery or NA or whatever it is, and they're doing those things on their own because they want to do them. When they're doing that, they're demonstrating that they really want to fix and change those things. And the folks at Celebrate Recovery do a great job. And so as a companion piece to what they're doing, I think that we are having success. I think there is benefit there. Are we 100% successful? No. But I don't count the success that way. I don't like statistics. I don't think statistics actually, I think they can be manipulated. And I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but I believe they can be manipulated. I'm about people. And so when you look at a certain individual, and so when I'm out in the community and I see an individual who I prosecuted, and they have been through the drug court program, and they're now doing well, and they're happy, and they'll come up and say hi to me instead of, you know, flip me off or whatever the case might be. I mean, that's a positive. That's a win. And so when that happens, I count that as a success. I count that as somebody that, yes, you know, that's been positive. And it's really a success for that person. You know, we provided the incentive to them. I think we did. And the mental health folks provided the tools and all those things. But they chose it. And they chose to make those decisions, those right decisions. And maybe thinking for a change helped that. And maybe whatever the case might be. But those individuals have decided to change their lives. That's pretty exciting. And that's a success to me. And it doesn't matter if it's just one person or if it's a million people. That's pretty
exciting. So everything costs money.
Yes.
How is drug court funded? And how does that compare to incarceration?
As far as compared to incarceration, I don't know the numbers on that. But I can tell you, so we are funded through the state. There's a state grant through the Department of Health. The county has a match that we're required to pay. But one of the benefits that we're able to do, so we do $9,000 of actual dollars match, and then we do substantial in-kind donations.
So what costs the money for a drug court participant?
So we have to have a director to run the program. We have to pay for the tests, right? So all the testing costs money. If we have a positive test, it has to be sent off to a lab. That costs money. It does not go to the Wyoming State Crime Lab that is already overworked with all the criminal stuff they do. And then also the counseling costs money. You know, I mean, so Northern and now VOA, they've been very good working with us. So when our budget started to get cut years ago because the state was in a downturn, we had to go to them. We're like, hey, you know, we used to pay you. I think it was at our height, we paid them $25,000, maybe $30,000 a year for what they were doing. The last probably 4 years, I paid them $15,000 for the counseling. So that's providing counseling to, and we have anywhere between 4 to 8 participants in the program throughout the year, sometimes more than that. And so they're providing a lot of one-on-one, a lot of group, thinking for change, all kinds of other stuff. They're providing that at a pretty low cost. And And they've worked with me every time. So one of the benefits of the increased funding that we've gotten this year is I can pay them more so they can hopefully provide more services.
So you're expecting that you'll be able to increase the number of participants?
Yes. So so what happens with the state, and this is the problem with our program, is it's small enough, and so the cost per capita is very high comparative to, say, a CASPER program or wherever it is. And we're pretty proud of the fact that Johnson County is one of the small jurisdictions that still has a drug court. Many of the small jurisdictions don't have them because in economies of scale, it just doesn't work. But we've been able to make it work by people, you know, volunteering their time, doing all kinds of that stuff. But anyway, our cost is a little over $9,000 per participant. And so they agreed to fund the last few years we've received funding for about four participants. They've agreed to fund six participants for us for this year. And so that's a significant increase, about $18,000 that has been increased for us. Our costs in doing that have not really changed. And so the benefit that we have is we can use that for more things, you know, more treatment, other things like that. We can get kind of creative with that money to use it for some of those things that would be beneficial while still serving more folks. So we had funding for four people, but we were running more people than that because we talked to VOA and we said, look, we're going to try to get as many people as we can in the program. And they said, fine. You know, we'll do it. However many you have, we'll do it for 15,000. And now we'll be able to say, okay, we've got slots for six. We can maybe take 10, you know, if we can get those.
Do you think you have 10 possible qualifying
participants? Over the course of the year? Yeah, probably. You know, one thing that, so Mark Wilson, who is the director for the program, he's really good about people. He does the court order testing too. And so the people that come in, you know, and every now and then, if he has somebody who he thinks may be a good candidate, he'll have a conversation with them and say, hey, maybe you should consider the drug court. It might be a good program for you. And we've had two people who have made application just recently based on that. They're coming in. And so, you know, part of it is sometimes, you know, so people say, well, you know, what do you need to qualify? Oftentimes somebody who gets a DUI the first time, or let's say they have a possession of marijuana the first time that they have that, they're probably not going to qualify. They might if they're entirely honest during the ASI process. You know, so sometimes they say, well, you know, this is the first time I've ever drank and drive. Well, logic dictates probably not. But we don't have proof otherwise. And so if I don't have other evidence to back up and say that's not accurate, and, you know, they're not completely honest, then they may end up not qualifying for drug court on something like that. But we've had other people on their very first DUI have qualified because they have a much more extensive history that we're aware of. And so it kind of depends. And so what I would say is that largely depends on the cases we have, right? And so if we have a bunch of folks that get possessions or they get DUIs or, you know, deliveries, if they would qualify, if we have a lot of substance abuse related charges, then yeah, people could come in. You know, so we've had people that have participated in the program on the meth endangered child, which means they had methamphetamine in a home where children are, which really serious deal and a scary deal. And in my world, that person, they need punished, but two, they need sobriety because we still got a kid and we still have a kid that is involved in that sort of thing. So we have to consider that. What do we do? You know, what do we do a year from now, 2 years from now? You know, make sure that kid is safe. And that's a whole nother discussion about,
sure,
you know, what happens with those sorts of things. But those are important.
And is fentanyl changing the game?
Fentanyl is changing the game because it's new enough in Johnson County that we're not complete. And comfortable is not the right word. I don't think you ever get comfortable with fentanyl.
Maybe familiar, maybe.
Familiar. Yeah, and so, you know, we've had some stuff come through, big quantities that we've had in the last year and a half that's coming through. The bigger concern that we have and the thing that we're trying to kind of educate folks on, and we may be doing some work in the community to try to educate the general public more about fentanyl, is the concerning thing is you don't know what fentanyl may or may not be in. You know, mean, they're putting fentanyl in everything, methamphetamine, marijuana. This won't be a surprise to you, but strangely, it is a surprise to some people. But the people that are dealing drugs really don't care about your health. They really don't care about you. And specifically, most of the fentanyl are what we call Mexican oxys, because they're coming from Mexico. And there's no FDA there. I mean, they probably have something, but not for fentanyl. It's not regulated. They don't care. They don't care how much fentanyl is in one pill. They don't care what they put the fentanyl in. All they care about is addiction and more sales. And if you die, it does not matter to them, because there's another person coming in behind. And so that's the scary thing to me, is methamphetamine is a scary enough drug in and of itself. But you pair that with fentanyl, then we're looking at a scary deal. And so how that's changing the game, it's not necessarily changing the game for drug court, right? Because it's still the same goal, is we don't care what your substance is, we're going to try to address that. But what it is changing the game for on us is, you know, okay, this person is a very heavy methamphetamine user. Are they going to be a good candidate to be in here? Is that something that we feel like we can help them get around? Is that something they're going to want to change in their life? And those are big questions. But the bigger question for the community, and the scarier thing for the community, is, you know, you don't know. You know, I mean, picking up a fentanyl pill and having it seep through your skin and then having you OD is pretty darn scary. And we had, you know, I don't know, 4 months ago maybe it was, we have two folks that are facing charges, and they had thousands of pills on them here at our come and go. And when law enforcement arrived, you know, they opened up the car, and my goodness, it's like just a fentanyl factory in that car. They're just all over. And so, and there's burned fentanyl, and there's stuff that's not burned, and there's, you know, there's foil and whatever else. So law enforcement shows up, and they're like, holy cow. You know, I mean, like, they take a step back for a second and make sure that they're safe, and then, you know, then they go in. So that has changed the game very much in what we do. You know, the other side of it is we've got the drug dog, and, you know, you don't want the drug dog to snort.
No, you can't put the drug dog in somewhere where you expect fentanyl.
Yeah. You can, where you think the presence is, but mm-hmm. where you think there might actually be pills or residue, you can't. And so there's all these things that are very different and more scary, and I think there's a learning curve with that. Our law enforcement guys are doing a great job of kind of working with that. You know, they have the Narcan, and they're able to do that. And people think, oh, well, why do we need Narcan in Johnson County? It's being used.
It is being used.
And that's the scary thing, is it's not one of those things like, oh, that doesn't touch us. Yes, it does. It's been used in Johnson County.
Well, all first responders now have Narcan. Right. It's been carried on the ambulance, I believe, the same as of the fire guys.
Yep.
You know, it's in the schools. Our school teachers have been trained in how to administer Narcan. It's part of our world now.
Yeah, and I don't think it ever won't be. And so the scary thing for a lot of law enforcement now is, you know, you do a drug bust, then you probably should assume that whatever the drug you get, it may have either trace amounts or large amounts of fentanyl with it. And that's, you know, that's a really different scenario than you used to pick up a bag of weed or something, you know, and now maybe not. You need to be a lot more careful on those sorts of things. And so, you know, I think the world is changing. You pointed out the drug use is on a rise. You know, once you, and so the question could be, well, you know, you've been doing the drug work for 20 years and yet drug use in Johnson County is increasing. Doesn't look like you're succeeding. You know, human behavior and human whatever is, you know, you don't change that. What I would say, Johnson County is still a good place to live, a safe place. We have a lot less drugs than most places. I mean, even if you go over the mountain to like Basin, you know, they've got a worse problem than what we have here. And so be thankful for that. We should be thankful for that. And also, there's a lot of folks that are proactive out there. And I count the drug court as just another tool in our tool belt to try to address the issues that we have with drugs and alcohol abuse. And if it's successful with one person, then it's a success. And, you know, incarceration isn't always successful. Probation isn't always successful. Various things aren't always successful, but they are with some. So we keep trying.
Tucker Ruby, thank you for a deep dive into drug court, what it is, what it's for, who it's for. Very much appreciate your time this afternoon. Thank you.
Absolutely.